Dear President.
My dear Mr. President.
Dear President Truman.
Dear Harry.
Living 1949, brought to you each week at this time by NBC and its affiliated stations, holds up its radio mirror today to reflect the letters and telegrams that daily pass through the White House mailroom, that we may hear the voices of the people, their hopes, their troubles, their suggestions, their thoughts on problems that concern us all, as they address themselves to their chosen leader, the President of the United States. We have entitled this drama document,
Dear Mr. President.
Your narrator with a postscript from Vacationing Ben Grauer, Kenneth Banghart.
Greetings, America. It has been written, and we believe it true.
There is no greater sounding board in the world than the White House.
Yes, to the White House in Washington, to 1600 Pennsylvania Avenue, from all the main streets of the nation, its side streets and country lanes, indeed from the high roads and low roads of the whole world, down upon the residence of the President of the United States, pour such a staggering flood of mail, such an endless and overwhelming variety of messages, that 22 persons need 16 hours of every 24 to sort, analyze, and dispatch it. Need an electric letter opener. Need sometimes a rule or a scale to measure or weigh pros and cons on an issue. Mail from little folk.
Dear Mr. President, my daddy said you'd send me your autograph if I was a good boy. I have been a good boy.
Mail from big folk.
My dear Mr. President, as a banker with more than 30 years' experience in handling credit, I should like to...
Mail from in-between folk.
Dear President, we're having a hard time of it ever since Joe got out of the Army. You're the only one who can...
Mail from the people.
It rains down upon the White House as postcards, greeting cards, letters, telegrams, newspaper clippings, resolutions, petitions, documents.
It is filled with pleas, fears, aspirations, advice, sympathy, denunciation, opinions, queries, admiration.
This is the gold mine we probe today, America, and for these treasures, that we may truly put our finger upon the pulse of the nation, and that you may hear its heartbeat. From George Washington to Harry Truman, most presidents have been concerned with the volume and the character of their mail. For letters addressed to the president are a weather vane that mark the people's identification with them, tell, as no newspaper can, what America thinks of them and how they're doing. Teddy Roosevelt always felt things were under control when he heard,
Mr. President, here are more letters from the people.
Bully, what do they say?
Well, sir, these have nothing in them but drawings of a big stick or a teddy bear.
President Coolidge, it said, wandered early into the mailroom each day to inquire...
Any mail for me this morning?
McKinley averaged 100 letters a day. By Hoover's time, the president's mail swelled to...
800 letters a day.
And when Franklin Delano Roosevelt brought the New Deal to the White House...
An average of 8,000 letters every 24 hours.
Perhaps no president more than FDR was alert to the significance of his mail. As a matter of fact, he was invariably upset if there was a sharp drop in it. But after his first fireside chat, when he invited...
My friends, tell me your troubles.
An avalanche of letters and telegrams descended upon the White House that never stopped coming as long as he was there. Today, President Truman's box score...
President Truman, in 1948, received 562,000 pieces of regular mail, 770,000 postcards, more than 180,000 telegrams, 225,000 pieces miscellaneous, and 15,000 gifts. Total mail for that 1 year, over 1,752,000 items, which in telegrams alone came to one telegram every 3 minutes.
The power of the president to inspire mail, in addition to merely receiving it by virtue of being president, is best demonstrated by what happened back in 1938. When President Roosevelt permitted contributions of dimes to fight infantile paralysis to be sent directly to the White House. Down to the mailroom went a casual warning.
Just keep your eyes open. You may possibly find a trickle of dimes in tomorrow's mail.
We'll watch for them.
Tomorrow.
Hey, what hit this place?
What do you mean?
All of a sudden, we got 30,000 letters for you on our truck.
30,000?
Yeah, and believe it or not, they all weigh like a ton of lead.
Give us a hand here, will you?
Yes, White House mail promptly jumped from 5,000 letters a day to 30,000. The next day?
50,000.
The next day?
150,000.
Letters fat with...
dimes. They're all over the place. Just try and find the office mail.
Dimes, dimes everywhere, and not only in letters, but made up as corsages, baked in cakes, embedded in concrete, resulting in a call for 50 emergency clerks. One woman, moneyless, wrote the president,
I'm sending you some of my hair. I understand hair is worth money. Will you please sell it and donate the money to the campaign?
Promptly into the hair-selling business plunges the White House, earns 80 more dimes. In time, a system is evolved whereby the coins are weighed instead of counted. And, fortunately, for in 1945...
$1.5 million in dimes arrived to swell the mail of the White House.
Roosevelt's dimes are just about the smallest object a president characteristically receives in his mail. Here are some of the others.
Most common gifts, books and neckties. Next, prize-winning fruits and vegetables, and food like wild goose, ham. Then, wood carvings, needlecraft such as prize quilts, portraits of the president, songs and the like. Christmas brings plum pudding, Thanksgiving, turkey and chicken.
About poultry, livestock and such, in the famous case, or should we say crates, of the chickens. Arriving at work one morning, the staff discovered already delivered...
Heavens, what on earth is this?
200 chickens, ma'am.
But who for?
President... I guess it must be in connection with Chickenless Thursdays.
It was. Farmers had sent them to show the president where they stood. To stave off more feathered arrivals, the hasty warning went out.
Send all chickens to the Walter Reed Hospital.
Small wonder, among those who work on the president's mail, the sigh goes up.
Never a dull moment.
How is the president's mail handled? Is it read? Who reads it? Is it answered? And who answers it?
To begin with, the White House mailroom is not in the White House. It is in the basement of the old State Department building adjoining the White House. What's more, it's not one room, it is seven rooms. Thrice a day to these seven rooms arrives...
mail truck!
This truck, during its three trips, deposits 3,000 pieces of mail. A staff of 22 promptly goes to work on the mail, beginning in the sorting room. To Living 1949, the chief of the White House mailroom reports...
We deliver the president's personal letters to him unopened.
Question asked, how do you ferret them out?
Well, I've been here 15 years. After a while, you get to recognize names, handwriting, and postmarks that give clues.
Since these personal letters are only a small fraction of the president's mail, the rest go through an electric letter opener and arrive...
here. 10 of us readers go over them carefully to decide to whom they should go for reply.
Question asked, where do they go?
Well, some to the president's aides and assistants, others to the government agency concerned with the subject matter of the letter. For example, if it concerns farming, probably the agriculture department, mining, the Bureau of Mines, so forth. They answer the letter sent to them.
Question asked, does the president ever see any?
President Truman is very interested in the mail. Naturally, of course, the demands of his office limit him to reading only a small portion of his mail, but many times we bring the more unusual or touching letters to his attention.
Further information gleaned, all packages addressed to the president are fluoroscoped. All food inspected and tested by the Food and Drugs Administration. All correspondence receives careful and personal attention, and if possible, is answered by someone in behalf of the president.
Letters to a president of the United States, any president, are probably unlike letters that come to any other living man. They're letters to a father confessor. They're letters to a Mr. Fix-It, to whom nothing is impossible. They're letters to a hero, responsible for most of the good in the nation. They're letters to a villain, responsible for most of its ills. Whatever shape they take, however, They embody the flavor of the people, the gist of the thinking of the nation that perhaps no other source provides as well. Let us now, with adjustments necessary to protect privacy, take a look at these letters. Actual letters, actually written.
Dear President Truman, I want to congratulate you on becoming President of the United States. I myself would have liked to vote for you, but I couldn't, because I'm only 11 years old. I hope you're...
Not all letters, of course, are so friendly. Invariably, many unfriendly ones find their way into the mailbag, and they go something like this.
Dear Mr. President, I cannot understand how one man can be so wrong about so many things. Take the Taft-Hartley Law. Now, while I am a Republican, I assure you my point of view on the labor question is absolutely objective, which is more than
I can... Of course, some letters go beyond this point, actually threaten the president. These are quickly handed over to the Secret Service, who promptly look into the matter. But most letters are respectful of the president's office and aware of the tremendous role he plays in our daily affairs. Witness the mail that swept in from the west upon the heels of the recent record-breaking snowstorm.
President Truman, White House, Washington, D.C. Thousands of sheep and cattle in this Colorado county face immediate starvation if hay is not flown in immediately. Situation desperate. Your help would be a miracle and avert national calamity.
I am adding my voice to those already raised in our state of Nebraska. As President of the United States, I know you are concerned with the needs of the people no matter where they are located. I am making a special plea to you. Let's not have the little come too late. We need funds and machinery. Children are suffering as well as...
You don't need to be told how the president came to their aid in this case. The Haylift wrote a new episode in American history. Perhaps no one group of letters has made a stronger impression upon the president than those from citizens desperate for homes.
Dear President, we're a rich nation. Why haven't we enough homes? Isn't there something you can do about the situation, Mr. President? We're being evicted. I've spent months trying to find a place where they'll take children. Looks like there isn't any such place. People like us haven't the money to buy a home at the prices they're asking, Mr. President.
Dear President Truman, I'm a little boy 9 years old, and I have a sister 11 years old. Everywhere we've looked, nobody wants to give my mother and father a place to live because of us. They say they don't want children in their homes. We need a home bad. Please help us. Thank you.
Such letters have helped make Harry Truman all the more determined in his demand for adequate housing legislation, and, too, have publicly wrung from him this aroused remark.
Children are as necessary to the welfare of this country as is Wall Street and the railroads or any other thing.
There is, of course, no end to the variety of the letters.
Dear Mr. President, my hesitancy in explaining the flying disc mystery was fear of possible resentment turned toward my innocent efforts. Juggling is my livelihood, and tricks with pie plates are my specialty. Now, this new trick of mine got a little out of hand. I knew that it was going to be a big trick when I started, but it went beyond my wildest expectations. In the first place, I did not realize that I was throwing plates so high. Now, I cannot be absolutely accurate, but I will admit that many of them have not responded to my backspin. To be perfectly honest, the trick is a little rough yet. Perhaps if I had studied air currents, this might never have happened. The finders of these plates should not try to throw them back. It should be quite plain that if this new trick is so difficult for an expert, a rank amateur should beware. I'm sorry I ever started the darn thing anyway.
If our memory serves us correctly, the so-called flying disc mystery never has been explained.
Well...
Dear President, sir... I read in the paper today where you'd cited an emergency and suspended lumber tariffs to end the housing shortage. Now, if Uncle Sam's going to import lumber, why not buy some from me right here in the good old USA? I have 100,000.
The Interior Department advised that Uncle Sam didn't buy standing timber. Suggested a contact.
My dear President Truman, forest fires in the United States are destroying millions of dollars of valuable property every year. Our methods of contracting this danger are so primitive they are on a par with methods of ancient Orientals who fought battles by throwing stink pots. I think it's high time the federal government did
something. Dear Mr. President, my heart has been moved for an area in Mississippi where babies are being born under deplorable conditions for lack of a hospital. As a nurse, I am anxious to assist these poor people in any way I can. But I am sure that it is a situation that cannot be remedied unless someone like yourself is gracious enough to help. Please advise me.
Letters to the President. Obviously, the President isn't able to take personal interest in all the messages that come to him, but there have been occasions when the President, moved by the critical circumstances, has in turn moved heaven and you know what to help the writer. One such case began with a phone call.
White House.
I'd like to talk to Mr. Truman.
Who?
Mr. Harry Truman, President.
President Truman is in conference. Can you tell me what you wanted to talk to him about?
Yes, it's like this. We live in a housing unit out here outside of Washington.
Yes?
Well, we can't get oil. Everyone around here is running out of oil, and the family across the street's got a little boy sick with measles, too. We told the oil company about it, but they haven't done anything yet. I talked it over with my husband this morning and told him I was going to call the president. We know the president can do anything.
I see. Well, my suggestion, madam, is that you send the president a telegram.
Do you think he'll help me get some oil?
You send that telegram.
Time of the call, about 10 o'clock. Time her telegram reached the White House, 10:30. 90 minutes later...
Hello?
Hello, this is the office of the District Fuel Coordinator.
Yes, sir.
You wired the president about an oil problem?
Well, yes, sir. We need oil real bad.
Well, don't you worry. We're going to see that you get some. Now, right now, there's a truck carrying 15,000 gallons on its way. You and all the others ought to have oil in a very few minutes.
Yes, sir. Oh, thank you, sir. Thank you. Oh, God bless the president.
Not all the communications reaching the White House seek help. Many offer it. Some of the offers are quite startling.
Dear sir, you've been a farmer, so I don't need to tell you how strong a bull is. Now, the bull is strong because he eats chlorophyll. Chlorophyll is the sun's energy stored up. This energy contains atoms. These atoms contain electrons. One teaspoonful of chlorophyll contains a billion atoms. No need to go to the South Pole to dig in the snow for a mineral to make the atom bomb, because I can take the chlorophyll right off your family's farm and combine it with a chemical affinity and blow hell out of all Kansas.
Yes, letter after letter speaks out on the subject of the atom, many most thoughtfully. Moreover, in the true spirit of American democracy, no one feels too insignificant to be heard.
My brother and I, as a committee of two, want you to hear what we think about the atom bomb. We believe, since we're going to be running the country someday, that we should have something to say. Well, we think the atom bomb should be kept secret, because if we give it to the Russians, they might use it on us. Then we wouldn't have any kind of world. We hope you'll keep in mind what we just told you.
Perhaps the president's most thought-provoking letters, however, concern the wide assortment of topics that come under the general head of foreign policy and are referred to the State Department.
We handle this correspondence in our public views and inquiries section, where it receives individual attention. Each week we write reports summing up the thoughts of these letters in specific issues, and these reports are circulated throughout the department and are sent to the Secretary of State.
Sample, on the meeting with Stalin from a man in Chicago.
Stand by your guns. Meet Stalin in the U.S. or not at all.
From a women's group in New York.
As mothers, we are interested in every effort to maintain peaceful relations. Cold wars lead to hot wars. We urge you to meet with Stalin immediately. You can catch more flies with sugar than you can with salt.
The issue, aid to China.
Mr. President, one tries not to be too quickly or too decisively influenced by journalists and pundits who criticize governmental policy. However, it appears to me impossible to judge our hands-off policy in China without suffering some embarrassment. Since every loss of land or people to communism carries terrifying implications, It is hard to see how our stand in China squares with the real interest and safety of the American people. I believe we should...
Communism. It is the offer of escape from oppression, Mr. President, that is responsible for the growth of communism. We can't fight that half as well with guns as we can by making the ideals of freedom
the
and
war
democracy
in Indonesia.
More appealing.
Mr. President, this resolution was passed by our veterans organization in Wisconsin. Resolved, whereas the Dutch action in Indonesia has further violated the peace of the world, and whereas this action is in violation of the United Nations decrees, be it resolved that further martial plan...
Hundreds of American voices spoke in letters to the President against the crime done Cardinal Minzenti.
My dear Mr. President, you are the head of the greatest democracy in the world. Better than I, you know its world influence, its obligation to spread truth, justice, and charity to a beseeching humanity. Here, then, is your signal to answer the call and help this man of God. Firmness is what is needed, and you possess...
And finally, on the subject of world fellowship, on help to other nations, the expressed willingness of Americans to share what they have and what they know is heartening. One man put it in words we can all understand.
Mr. President, I remember when I went to school, just an ordinary country boy. Some of the city kids had apples every day. Now, they taunted us with them apples, but they never told us where we could get some. Maybe that's what we're doing here, bringing about our apple and keeping it to home. Now, I believe in helping a man until he can help himself. But, Mr. President, there are billions of people who'll never be able to help themselves until we show them how. The way to one peaceful world, Mr. President, is not to wave an apple under the nose of the other fella, but to give him a bite and show him how to get one for himself.
So they come, hour upon hour, day in and day out, thousands upon thousands of letters, words of the people written to their president. Under a totalitarian form of government, no citizen could write as freely to his leader. Here, anyone can take a pen or pencil in hand and match his voice equally with another. This is democracy at work. This is government of, for, and by the people. This is America. An America to which we all owe duty through exercise of our ballot, through knowledge of what goes on, through writing our elected representative, yes, even if we feel like it, our president, our thoughts on the matters that concern us all, our hopes, our problems, our suggestions. How much others envy us this privilege is testified by the letters that come to the president from all over the world. That we may better appreciate our freedom, we ask you to hear one final letter from one seeking as her last hope the same privilege you enjoy for her only son.
The Dodecanese Islands, Greece. Your Honor, President Truman. My husband died 2 years ago and left me 4 children, 3 girls and 1 boy, now 15 years old. I have not the least income, and I have to work hard to earn the living of my family, but what I earn is too little. I ask nothing for myself, only that I can send my boy to America, where he can study and there to find the opportunity to grow to be a free man. I have nobody who can do this generous act, and that is why I address myself to your honor. You are a friend of all the free nations and try to help them live better. Will you help my boy? Will you be our savior?
Living 1949 is prepared and presented for the University of the Air by an NBC special program staff under the supervision of Wade Arnold. Lou Hassam writes the scripts. The narrator today was Kenneth Banghart. Music is composed and conducted by Dr. Roy Shield. This program is directed by Jack Cuney. We invite you to keep abreast of Living 1949 by listening next week to a salute to our U.S. Army in a drama document entitled, Where is Our Army Now? This program came to you from our Radio City studios in New York. Robert Warren speaking. This is NBC, the National Broadcasting Company.